Hi, Office 365 fam. Welcome to the Stories of Modern Work podcast, where we discuss thoughts and experiences of Office 365 users, IT pros, and community leaders in using Office 365 as a modern workplace platform. My name is Jack Kakalapudi from Modern Work Training and Consulting, based in Melbourne, Australia. We specialize in providing personalized Office 365 training to businesses to improve user adoption of Office 365 apps and services. You can find out more details about the modern workplace technology services we provide on our website, modernwork.cloud. In episode 12 of the Stories of Modern Work podcast, I speak with Alexander Dick from AvePoint as our guest to share his experiences and thoughts on Office 365 governance. Before we begin the episode, I would like to say thanks to all of you who have listened and subscribed to the Stories of Modern Work podcast. The main aim for this podcast is to give you an insight into how others use Office 365 as a modern work platform. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, I highly recommend you to subscribe and leave your feedback and rating to help me improve the podcast in the coming episodes. All right, let's get into the episode. Hi, Alex. Thanks for coming on the show. So before we go further into the actual the interview itself, can you just introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about what you do, company that you work for, and so on?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, thanks for having us along today. I feel very privileged. I've definitely kept up to date with quite a few of the vlogs and a few of the podcast episodes you've already done. So big fan at the moment. But my name's Alexander Dick. I'm an enterprise account executive at AvePoint. I've been working with AvePoint for about almost 5 years now. AvePoint, for anyone that didn't know, we're an ISV providing solutions around Office 365, helping customers get to Office 365, protect their data in Office 365, provide some governance framework with our solutions, and then also records management around 365 as well.
Before we go any further, Alex, I just heard somewhere that AvePoint actually has the biggest product development team after Microsoft. Is that true?
It is. We have a lot of Microsoft MVPs. So we've got quite a large product development team based out of China and the US. So AvePoint are a company that are part of the Microsoft Tiering Partner Program. So we're called a Tier Zero partner, and we get to work with a lot of the innovation team out of the US, out of Redmond, which gives us a lot of early access to new releases and changes to Office 365 that will often influence the way that our product will end up working, which is something that we're obviously also very privileged to be a part as well.
Yeah, excellent. I think if anyone is working in Office 365, admins or power users, I think they would have known AvePoint at some point. You do a very good community outreach. You produce a lot of white papers and a lot of content in the community as well. So, excellent. Thanks for all of that. So today, I just wanted to focus mostly on the governance side of things. I hear a lot of stories around, usage of Office 365 is out of reach, or the governance of it's organically being used by users without actually having proper governance structure on it. They find their way to, say, Teams, and they start creating a lot of Teams. They find their way to SharePoint, they create a lot of Office 365 groups, and there's no connect between what they want to do and the number of groups they may actually see wanted in the organization. For example, a HR person can create their own HR team, and it doesn't mean that it's the team for the HR. It could be one of the teams, and yeah. Which one to use and so on. So I've seen some instances of that spread of Office 365 groups and Microsoft Teams. So can you explain, can you give us some stories of here from your clients around governance?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's been a really, really big talking point recently with a lot of our customers, because Office 365 is a base platform. You've got your Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, OneDrive for Business. Like, it's those three platforms alone is really reflective of what you could have potentially had on premises. And one of the biggest changes is obviously the mobility and the, from a security perspective, 365 is great, but the really, really big game changer is something like Microsoft Teams. That is, there's allowing all of those assets in Office 365 to come together, which then makes it a really valuable asset to a company for future productivity perspectives, for making people more mobile. They've got the app on Teams. I'm not sure if I'm actually, I'm quite sure that you probably would use it. But it's something that we rolled out and it's absolutely awesome, which then leads to it being one of the fastest adopted areas in Office 365 that Microsoft have just about ever seen.
Yeah. See, my pet peeve with Microsoft Teams is I definitely use it on my mobile. I deal with a lot of Office 365 customers, and I have to set up a guest account for them, or I am a guest account, guest access to their account. And switching between tenancies in Microsoft Teams app is such a nightmare. That's something that Microsoft, I think, are actually working on.
Yeah.
Account switching to make it more seamless.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that could be a problem from governance as well, especially when you're dealing with a lot of teams.
Of course.
Collaborating with external parties could
exactly.
Could it be improved a bit?
Exactly. And like, look, I think we were talking about a little bit earlier, but I mean, one of the benefits of using Office 365 is that you now have the ability to keep all of your company's information within the single platform. So the old way of working might have been you have a SharePoint environment, you have a file system, and you have an Exchange server. And if you wanted to be able to communicate with anyone, that you would communicate by sending out an email. And you would attach a document to an email, you'd send that out, and as soon as that person hits send on the email, all of a sudden that email is outside of your office, outside of your system, and you have no control over it anymore from a company perspective. It could literally be anywhere else in the world. The new benefits that you have with something like external sharing and something that's a really, really valuable tool within something like Teams is that instead of sharing a document outside of your organization anymore, you invite them into your environment to be able to collaborate and produce new versions and get all the native capabilities and native reporting functionality that 365 has to offer on that document without ever losing any side of it whatsoever within your environment. It's one of the most powerful things of it. And that's one of the big reasons why people are starting to look at Teams in a much, much larger capacity as well.
Yeah, that's definitely a big game changer for a lot of people. You know, forget everything else. Just give me that one feature and I'm happy to pay you the Office 365 subscription.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah. So, and look, it has led to, and like I said before, one of the fastest adopted pieces that Microsoft have ever actually worked with to date is Microsoft Teams. They've got exponential growth across a lot of organizations. The typical growth model that we see from a company that deals a lot with Teams and understanding how Teams is going to be used in an organization and what that actually means to the organization is we usually see it starting off as a POC and only within the IT team, because the IT team are the ones that typically know of the POC, but they also are technically savvy to be able to understand how Teams works, and they're going to be the best test case for it because they're not going to need a large amount of training around the use of something like Teams. They're typically on top of a lot of those things. Usually starts within the IT team. It might branch out. You might start creating about 30 odd teams. You're testing it and everything's going quite well. A few whispers among the organization, all of a sudden you hear a different department understand that IT are using Teams as part of Office 365, and they go in there, and one of the functionalities as part of using Office 365 is that at a top level you have it on or you have it off, or you have a process put in place that isn't necessarily the smoothest process, where someone would have to go through and then request to have a team created for them by the IT team. So if IT are usually doing the test case, they typically have it on at a tenant level, and then they might have already created a few ones already, but people can often find Teams and they'll start to use it because it is a really, really simple solution for people to be able to adopt.
That's if IT actually know what they're doing, from a proof of concept point of view.
We give them as much credit as we can, obviously. Yeah, they do a great job in most areas. So,
but I've also seen instances where, IT, involuntarily, turned on the switch and they don't know that they did.
Yep.
and users from marketing or HR starting to start creating, they create a YAML group, and all of a sudden they end up creating other instances of Office 365 yeah. groups. And also, they wanted to create a team, they create a team without actually having any governance whatsoever, out of the box, vanilla stuff. They create, they start using it. One thing, they could like it. They could say, okay, it's working for me. You know, I can start collaborating with people internally. They find their way out, Googling and searching on YouTube and find out stuff on how to use it, and they start using it.
Yeah.
But they could also, it could boomerang, right? It could actually come back and say, hang on, this is not what I wanted. This is not how I was supposed to work. And it could actually send a very bad signal even before the actual digital transformation journey has started for the customer. So that's why I think governance is very important. In terms of from a governance perspective, can you explain what is governance?
Yeah, I mean, look, to be honest, like the hardest conversation that we have with companies is defining what governance is, because governance traditionally has always been a really, really broad topic, and to one company that might be working in a mining sector, governance is one thing, and to a government department, local or state or federal, it will mean something completely different. Yeah. And so defining what governance actually means can take a lot of time sometimes. Fundamentally, from an AvePoint perspective, we believe that there are three key areas to creating operational governance and effective, predictable governance when you want to start using something like Microsoft Teams.
Yeah.
So the way that AvePoint break it down is that we break it down into three key areas, and we believe that the point of creation is the most important part of how you're going to be able to drive an operational, repeatable, consistent governance process when using something that is entirely end user driven. So in the past, you would have spun up a SharePoint site. The users don't really make many alterations to the SharePoint site. They just use it. It's basically a service that IT provide.
Yeah.
The new way of working is that the users have full control over what the new areas that they want to work in are going to be and how they're going to be created if you just have native functionality turned on.
Yeah.
So the way that we approach it is on the point of provisioning, understand what the user is wanting to be able to create and what they're actually going to be using that team for, who the members of that team are going to be, what department they might be in, having something like a consistent naming convention as well. So the common one that we see as well is HR want to create or people in culture team want to create a new team that might be called contracts. The legal department at some point in time are also going to want to create a team called contracts.
If they haven't already created one.
If they haven't already created one, right? So to avoid the internal fight in the first place, how are you going to be able to provide a consistent, just something as simple as a naming convention across each team that's going to be created that makes teams even usable? Because you don't want people to be blocked from using something like Teams, or they're going to go and find something else that's going to be able to serve their purpose, like Slack or like Box or Dropbox or Google Drive. They'll find a way. So you need to make it as usable as possible and as user-friendly as possible. So after putting them through the provisioning process, asking them a few questions, it gives you enough of an understanding of what that team is actually about, and then also provides the company with some ownership over the information. So whoever requests the creation of that team is the owner of the information within that team. In the past, it would have been IT that would have owned the platform and therefore would have been seen as owning the information within the platform, whereas the way that we see it is the person that creates that new site should be the owner of the information within that site because they know it best. Yeah. They know exactly what the project is, who should be involved, and the life cycle of that information as well.
Yeah, so it's giving back the power to the business, but in a controlled fashion.
Exactly right, exactly right. There's also other things in there that you can do, like do you need external sharing, yes or no? If it has financial information, they probably don't need external sharing in there. They might for a certain use case, but it all goes through an approval process anyway.
Sure. So this means that the users actually have to fill a form. Is that how it works?
That is correct.
Yeah.
The native way of requesting a team anyway is filling out a form. And all you need to do is ask maybe two or three different questions. And we always say that part of defining your governance plan is understanding what questions you can potentially not get them to answer and put in place for them already.
Yeah.
Based on some information that might already be about that user within the system. And it's about getting that balance right, because they don't want to fill out a really long form, but they want to fill out something that is going to give them what they need in order to be able to do their job, especially if there's a really quick turnaround from filling the form out. Yeah. So the creation of that workspace process is also really fast in the back end.
Sure. And the, you know, filling the form is one thing, and the approval doesn't actually have to go to IT, because people don't like to send everything to IT in most instances. So it can be also say, all right, I want to create a new site. So I fill a form, and the form can actually go to my manager, right? Or it could go to a HR manager, or if I belong to HR team, who is trained upon to make that decision around whether the team is needed, or if there's an existing team that already solves the same purpose.
You're exactly right. So what we want to try and avoid is having an IT team that could be relatively small, creating a bottleneck for the creation of these teams. Or once again, the users just aren't going to want to work in them, because it's going to take too long to turn around the creation of this new team. So what we really recommend is, and the people that know the most about the information are people like the managers of the person requesting the team. They know that that project's coming up, and they know that that team needs to be created, and they know that these are the right people that mean to be a part of the team.
Yeah.
IT don't often know half of these things to start with, and it shouldn't even be their job to be able to do those kinds of things. So yeah, you're completely right. It's much, much better if you put the creation process and the approval process back on the business, rather than adding another thing to the list of things that the IT team already have to deal with, which is quite extensive in most cases already.
Yeah. So that's the creation time. You said there's three-step process,
yes,
right? So then you have maintenance and then expiration as well.
Yes.
So
yes.
Can you say, give us your thoughts on the maintenance and the expiration?
Yeah, of course. So the active lifecycle phase, which is what we call it, is when the team is up and running, the project is up and running, and it can be quite dynamic. So one of the great things about teams is that you can invite anyone within the company inside the team to be able to work in there if they need to be part of the project, but you can also invite external parties in as well. So if you have an external contractor that needs to be a part of a team for a certain period of time, you want to be able to invite them in. So once again, you're avoiding things like sending emails out to the external contractor, losing visibility over that information.
Yeah.
But you also want to make sure that if a contractor or if someone as part of the company has moved on from that project, that they don't still have access to these locations, because it could be quite damaging to the company at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So the ownership that we created during the provisioning process is then going to be able to push out a recertification of permissions process to the owner of that group or that team. And they're going to be the ones that make the decision on whether or not those people still need access to that location. And the way that we typically see it set up is once every 2 months, once every 3 months, an automated email is going to be sent out, and the email is going to say, please check the permissions within this team. Make sure that these people still need access to the information. It also gives them an opportunity to add new people into the team as well.
Or remove the ones that are no longer required.
Yeah, completely remove them. You can even do things like change their access to read-only access, so non-contribute anymore. So there are a lot of different options when it comes to that, and that's like, once again, leaning back on the what is governance, there's a lot of different options to be made, a lot of different choices to be made along the way that's going to fit best within your company.
Right. So I think recertification process is something that not many organizations will think through. You know, it's security is something they always think that it's set once and that's it. But you're right. You need to really go back in time, go back and say who has got access to what.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, for example, due to change of roles, people may not actually need to have access to the information they had 6 months ago or
exactly,
a year ago and so on.
Yeah. And look, we always recommend to companies as well, just on a side note, that the best way to organize your AD in the first place is to do it role-based.
Mm.
We think that that's probably the best way to be able to do it in case you do have that change of personnel. It's really simple for you to be able to give them permissions and securities to a new system. But you're right. Like, their teams are meant to be dynamic. They're meant to be involving external parties and different people within the organization, and you're not always going to have an AD group that's going to suffice to the permissions required for a team to be able to work in. So, yeah. So that we consider that, as well as changes to something like metadata with the team as well. That's something that can change during the active lifecycle phase, and It's just something that needs to be easy for the end user to be able to manage and for the business to have confidence that it is also being managed as well. So having audit trails during the active lifecycle phase is a really important part of being able to prove things that happen along the way.
Right. So with the lifecycle governance, can a team actually start off as a private team and then move, let's say, for some reason you wanted to make it public? Can that be done as well as part of the governance mechanism? Or
I
haven't actually seen that even natively in Office 365. Is that a possibility? I'm not sure. I have to check.
Yeah. It depends. Like we haven't seen that specific requirement very often. A team going from private to public, maybe from public to private. That's probably one that we see more often than not. Mm. Yes, like it's possible to be able to do those sorts of things.
Yeah, probably you're working on a secret project and then the project is now ready for launch and you want to make it public for everyone else to actually have access to. Yeah, I think there's a need for it, but yeah. What about the expiration of the end of a team?
Exactly. Right? So the most important part that we speak to a lot of companies about is if you have 1,000 employees, and each one of those tomorrow goes out there, you've turned Teams on, you've communicated to the business that Teams is on. If they each go out there and they now create their own team each, you have 1,000 teams. And you have no understanding of, from an IT perspective, what's going on in them, who's meant to have access to them. It comes back to that ownership component as well. But also, how long are these people going to need them around for? Because you don't want to find yourself in a position in 2 years, 3 years time where Teams has been on and all of a sudden you have 10,000 teams and they're all coming up in your search. It's clogging the usability of Office 365. You have to keep hiding them in your Teams interface and it creates quite an annoying process for an end user, right? Like you don't want to be involved in that. You don't want to be the one that goes through and cleans it up. So it's about making sure that you have things like an inactivity threshold. So if a team hasn't been accessed in X period of time, what needs to happen to that?
Yeah.
And we need an input from the end user to make sure that the right thing is happening to this team as well. Because once again, IT's job is not to know what information is being worked on, but it's to make sure the right process is in place to ensure that the system stays up and running the whole time.
Sure. So this is a good to, like, you know, a good way of doing it. The best practice of governance is making sure that you all the three phases, you know, right from start day one to whenever it is expired. So what like someone who is just starting their Office 365 journey, that's a good story to have. You know, this is the three steps that you need to take care of.
Yes.
But what if they've already been using Office 365 for a little while now without actually thinking through of this governance hat, putting the governance hat on? How do you come in the middle of the journey and put a governance layer on it?
Yeah, so the scenario that you just described is probably about 95% of the cases that we have come to us.
Yeah.
We have got teams, we've turned teams on, now we're in a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
So it's usually working in the understanding that pain is going to be coming because you see what the issue is going to be at the start, which is, we wish every customer came to us and said, we know what the issue is going to be and we need your help to start with. It's rarely ever the case. Most of the time we have customers coming to us saying, oh my God, we have 2,000 teams and we have absolutely no idea what's going on with them and they're just going to keep growing and growing and growing as the adoption of Teams comes.
That's the horror story number one. 2,000 teams, don't know what to do with that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right.
So what do you do in that case?
So in that case, so we have, as part of our solution, we have the ability to ingest existing teams and being able to apply a really short recertification process. So the first thing you want to be able to do in that scenario is we want to know what teams are still relevant. Because when you start teams up and everyone has the ability to control and create whatever they want, you can have test one, test two, test three. We could go out, Jag and Alex could go out and create our own team ourselves, or we might just be chatting away in it for a little bit. We're probably going to forget about it because we've got other work to do. If it's not important, you want to make sure that you're getting rid of a lot of those teams. And you can cut back on a lot just by sending out an automated process saying, do you still need this team, yes or no?
Yeah.
And that would be the first thing that we would recommend to be doing. Another one would be, if it's a yes and you want to keep it around, how long are you going to put for that team to go through that same recertification process again? So usually we see 6 months, and then from that 6 month point in time, you might extend out another 12 months. It's just part of the process of understanding what you want out of it. And typically on that front, you can clean up on 75% of the active teams in your environment pretty quickly just by applying an automated recertification process.
Sure. So when you say clean up, you're essentially deleting those teams, the ones that are, or are you putting them into an archive state? Or
It doesn't have to be delete, because sometimes even if a team hasn't been open for quite some time, it might still have some information in there that's going to be quite important to the company. So there are options. You can go through, you can flick it to read only for a period of time. If it hasn't been read in a period of time, then you can do something else with it after that. But it's about providing some sort of natural progression or life cycle of management when that team is coming to an end, or when it's no longer required in the company as well.
Sure. And what about? I think the people need to think about deletion as well. I know you're coming from a holding the information itself. Say for example, like say Jags created HR team site, team HR calling human resources, and that's a test site that I've just created without actually thinking it through. Now, if you're going to hold on to it, you know, if you're going to archive it, the namespace HR team or HR managers or something has been reserved for that, and they can't. Now, if you wanted to set up a proper team with proper governance around it, you can't use the same namespace.
Yes.
Yeah. So for that reason, I think sometimes you may actually want to delete some of your teams, especially if they matches with your naming convention and things like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I completely agree. And a lot of people are quite scared about deleting things, which would probably lean more on a data protection cloud backup discussion, which would mean that if at some point in time you did want to go back and resurface something like a team chat and the SharePoint documents associated to that, or the permission structure associated to that, AvePoint obviously have a solution that can help along those lines as well. But but people need to not be so scared about deleting things during their environment. If it's not being used anymore and the end user says, yep, I'm not using it anymore, and there's no information there that needs to be kept, if you don't have any regulations to keep documents for a certain period of time, you should start feeling comfortable about actually deleting those sorts of things, and potentially having the same team with the same name pop up with different people a couple of months later. It's just one of the outcomes and one of the possibilities of using it.
And from a naming convention point of view, yes, we agree that we need to have a proper naming convention for teams, right? So now that you're coming in after a little while, there's already say 2,000 teams.
Yeah.
What can we go and rename those existing teams that you selected to be like, okay, these teams are needed. Can we go ahead and rename them to the new naming convention?
So there's some native limitations around what Microsoft are able to provide third-party vendors like ourselves when it does come to renaming things. So something like the shared mailbox that gets created with the team, we can't go through and we can't change that shared mailbox address. We can change what appears to the end users and what will actually drive the search capabilities with 365 if they are looking for a team. There are some limitations around that if retroactively coming back and changing those. Often we find that if a company has gone through organic growth with teams and there has been no structure around it, that they're pretty willing to make a bit of a small sacrifice on the side to ensure that they get longevity out of creating a solution that is going to be a sustainable model for them to be able to get the value out of in something like Teams.
Okay, in your experience, would you actually ever, did you ever have to say, oh, throw away whatever you got, it's so bad? I'm trying to get some more horror
stories. Yeah, you want
to
hear it.
Have you just throw everything out, start fresh? Is that the case? Have you seen any instances like that?
We're yet to have one that says completely start fresh because even though we often think that users are quite malicious people and that they never want the best interests of what the IT team actually want.
Exactly right.
The users are the enemy and we're just here to support them. But there are actually some of them out there that do use the platform how it's meant to be used. So to come along and say, just completely bin everything that you've ever done, you could be it's too risky. Like, and it's too against the flow of what the users might have been doing in the past. So we've had examples where users are so used to creating new teams through something like Planner, and the adoption of Planner is really easy for them. They don't want to remove the ability to create teams natively from Planner. So we still let them do those sorts of things. But once that team is created, it then just gets roped into a policy in the back end that our product already automatically picks up new creation of teams and then starts putting additional metadata, additional policies around that to make sure that it does comply by the native governance. And that's just an example of a customer that was very, very comfortable with the usage of teams and native creation. Yeah. So yeah, it's very, very circumstantial. We haven't had the scenario of turning around and saying
trying to pull you in.
Yeah.
Look. So we've been talking about Microsoft Teams predominantly, but whatever we said in a conversation, it's also for any other Office 365 group or anything like that, isn't it? It's not just Microsoft Stream team. It's also for any Office 365 group.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it depends on how much control that the company actually wants to have over something like, even something like SharePoint Online. Like, you can still give users quite a lot of flexibility and the ability to be able to change things in SharePoint Online. And if you want to give them more flexibility around that, and I mean, the fundamental theory that we work off is users just need to be able to do their jobs. So try and not be a blocker for doing their jobs. So if their job might require them to be able to make changes to SharePoint Online, it's about IT enabling users to be able to make those changes and know that you still have confidence that your system's going to be in a particular way.
Sure.
And that you can also simply revert those changes if there's something that isn't something that you want to have happen in the first place. So, look, across groups, across teams, across SharePoint Online, there's all different types of governance policies you can place on those.
I think you just said something which caught my attention there. You said something about reversing what they've done. Mm. Can you give me some examples of how you could do that?
Yes. So, it depends if you want to look at it from a deletion perspective. So if you want to look at it from a user has deleted X site collection or S document and you want to be able to get that back, that's looking at it from one perspective. Another one that we see quite often is, especially with some powerful solutions like Delve in 365, is like all of a sudden, if you want to use something like Delve that's a really, really powerful solution, you need to make sure that your permission model is tight.
Yeah.
Like you can't have gaps in your permission model. And that also comes back to the ownership of the information and making sure that the people that own it have the right control and the right understanding of who's meant to have access to it. Because if we're working on a document together and then HR, I'm also working on a document with someone in HR, if they're working on a contract for someone being terminated or something like that, that could all of a sudden pop up in my Delve.
Yeah.
Because, and so being able to do something like revert permissions back as well if users make changes is really important. So do, whether it's an out-of-place restore of permissions or be able to produce a report and then copy those permissions from what they were 2 days ago, that's really important a lot of the time.
Yeah, excellent. I think you mentioned Delve, and recently I heard a story that, you know, one of my connections have had to create a PowerShell script to disable Delve for certain users.
Yeah.
That exact reason, where permissions are not set up properly, they're seeing way too much where they're not supposed to. And the executive order for that is, you know, disable Delve, you know, rather than actually having to fix the permissions itself.
Yep.
Or the quick fix they went with is to disable the whole application itself. But Delve actually is quite a powerful one application, like you said, which provides very good insights into the productivity insights into using Microsoft Graphs. It brings out content to you rather than you having to
go
to
the content really itself.
So turning off Delve is not a governance fix. Rather, you would actually find out, you know, what permissions are set up, why they set up that way, has someone changed it, and you revert back to the right permission structure.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're in an interesting time now where a lot of technology that companies use will dictate the success of the company, and restricting users the the access to a productivity application could impact the way that they work day to day, and it could set the company back compared to a company that might actually be using some of that functionality. So you want to be able to enable as much as you possibly can that is going to be benefiting the company to be able to progress with the employees being able to do their day-to-day job in a more efficient and fast manner.
Yeah.
And trying not to restrict them with a lot of functionality. And we often say that if you're too scared about using something, and we often see the example as Teams, they want to turn it off because they don't know how they're going to control it. You want to make sure that you give something back to the users as well. If you don't give something back and you only want to take something away, they're going to end up finding a way to be able to do it differently. And that's when we start hearing things about a small pocket of the company has started up Slack, or I heard that so-and-so in this department started using Google Drive to share documents out, and all those things can be solved within something like Teams and the native functionality in 365. And it's about giving it to them so you have more control over what they do day to day.
Right. So governance is not just restricting too much. It's also giving the users what they need, but in the right way with a proper control mechanism on top of it.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Word for word.
That's more like, you know, a 1,000 feet.
Yes. Yeah. From a long way up. Yeah.
Excellent. So before we talk about the actual AvePoint governance tool itself, where if someone wants to find out more information,
yes,
what they need. Before talking about that, I just wanted to say, talk about what's available natively in Office 365. Let's say someone just bought Office 365 licenses and they want to make maximum use of out of it. What governance controls are there in out of the box?
Well, there's a lot of things, like the native one that I discussed before is you turn it off or you turn it on. And people see that as a governance control, which is if they can't have access to it, I don't even need to worry about it. The other one is you can turn native creation off at the tenancy level. And you can have, if people know about it, they can submit a support ticket to IT, and then IT have the ability to be able to go through and create that. It often requires IT having not only heavy involvement with the creation of the team and the management of the team ongoing, but they also have to then start asking a lot of the questions about, like, what's this team going to be used for? Who's going to be a part of this? What additional metadata need to be associated with that? And it does become a bit of a bottleneck for the use of Teams, which then, I mean, it will just lead to people using other things that are outside of what that business or that company or that department have control over. So there are some native capabilities from that perspective, but when it does come, I mean, like you see the end user creation process, public or private. Some people see that as a bit of a governance solution.
Yeah.
Sometimes you, in some instances, you can attach additional metadata to it as well. That could be part of your governance framework. But in all honesty, there's not a whole lot when it comes to controlling teams. And
there is some mechanism around reserving certain words from not appearing in the naming of the groups, for example. You don't want to create
just a native naming convention things as well.
And there is native group expiration setup as well. You can expire a group if it's inactive for X number of, but it doesn't actually go through certain approval steps that you could probably use a third party tool and so on. But I think it's if someone is actually starting to think of rolling out Microsoft Teams or Office 365 groups quite extensively into their organization now, I think they should start looking into what's available natively and make that call decision.
Definitely.
Around, you know, is that enough? You know, if not, then probably look into, say, third-party apps like AvePoint Governance, right?
Yeah.
So talking about AvePoint Governance, can you just give us a bit more insight into the actual tool itself? And if someone wants to get their hands on, how do they go about that?
Yeah, of course. So in terms of solutions for Office 365, AvPoints are quite mature. So from a bit of background around AvPoints solutions as well is, I mean, AvPoints are a company that's been around for just about 18 years now, traditionally stemming from the on-premises use of SharePoint and being able to support an on-prem version of SharePoint, getting between versions of SharePoint and doing a lot of things around the infrastructure management as well, so offloading things like SQL to cheaper storage as well. Since then, and probably I think it was about 5-6 years ago, we converted our on-premises solutions to SaaS-based solutions. So all of our solutions now that support Office 365 are SaaS-based, which means that the classic things of there's no install, There's no downtime for updates. AvePoint run the platform for you. All you need to know is how to configure the platform and drive as much value out of it as possible. So all of our solutions now that have been converted to a SaaS model have been around for about 5 or 6 years, which puts us in the mature bucket for SaaS-based solutions. They all sit on the Azure tenancy. When a customer signs up, they get to choose where their tenancy is going to be located. And we should traditionally tell people as close as possible to where your 365 tenancy is for the best performance. And out of that platform, we call it an AvePoint Online Services platform, which has a bundle of different solutions that can be activated once you have that platform up and running. Cloud governance is one part of that platform that targets the specific management and proactive management of a lot of end-user-driven functionality within Office 365. What we're trying to do and establish with something like cloud governance is give back power to the IT team to be able to control something that is entirely end-user-driven and that is going to drive a lot of value for a company.
Sure.
And that's essentially all we're trying to achieve out of that.
Yeah. And if someone wants to actually get their hands on, there's probably trial options as well, right? So probably we can leave the link to the trials in the show notes for the podcast interview itself.
Yeah.
If they want to find out more information, where do they go?
Obviously, our website, www.avpoint.com/au we've
just
also
search for AvPoint.
Yeah, just search AvPoint. I'm sure you'll be able to find it. We've also got we've been doing a lot of roadshows and stuff as well. So we actually have a Microsoft Teams adoption roadshow that's going to be happening in the, I think it's the back end of the first week of May and the second week of May as well, that I would highly recommend people to come along to. It's about sustainable adoption of Teams in 365. We also have a lot of ebooks and some really good guides to information management and operational governance in Office 365 as well, that I think through the website would probably be the best way to be able to access those. But yeah. Some really good material.
So the roadshow events, is it Australia only or is it worldwide?
It is Australia only. So we have our one and only Ducks coming out from the United States for this one, which is really exciting for us. And if anyone actually knows him, he has been to a few of the Microsoft events that have been hosted in Australia in the past. He's a bit of a celebrity in the Microsoft ecosystem.
He's the one who dances for the Gangnam Style.
Done Whip Nay Nay. He's done all these kinds of things as well. So he's going to be the one that is actually doing the roadshow when it comes out to Australia, which I think just on that front is going to draw quite a lot of attention. So it's obviously going to be like a first in best dress scenario, and they're trying to hire out the biggest room that we can find for people to be able to attend, but can't make any promises on that front.
Sure. I will just provide some details to me, and I'll leave that in the show notes.
Yeah, of course.
To the actual, if someone wants to register for the roadshow as well. I think myself, I want to come and see Doug's present as well. He's done some presentations about presentations, and I've actually... I've learned a lot from his presentations about like how to be the rock star presenter or something like that.
The presentations on presentations. Yeah. He's a pro at those ones. He absolutely loves it. Yeah. Excellent. Fantastic.
Thanks, Alex. I think it's a very insightful chat with you about the governance side of things. It's something that is lacking in a lot of Office 365 implementations is the governance and people and governance. Bad governance directly, leads to user adoption issues as well.
Of course,
and it comes back, and so the user adoption and governance is the biggest pain points for most customers in Office 365
yes.
at the moment, and at Modern Work as well. Like we've been talking about it, that's where we wanted to provide our services in as well. So thanks for sharing your insights on governance, and we'll leave some material on the show notes as well for if someone wants to come and speak with you about to get more details, then we can actually
I mean, obviously I want to thank you again. I said at the start that I've been a bit of a fan of the vlogs that you've been putting out on LinkedIn, and if anyone's out there listening to this at the moment, I think they should definitely jump on Jag's LinkedIn profile and check out some of the vlogs that he's been doing as well. But yeah, feel very privileged to be a part of this. And yeah, thank you very much for having us on board.
Thanks. Thanks, Alex.
So there you have it. I've definitely enjoyed and learned a lot from Alex about how to go about setting up Office 365 governance. Hope you've enjoyed and learned something new as well by listening to this episode. If you did, please subscribe to the podcast and stay tuned for more episodes in the coming weeks. Alex, thanks once again for coming on the podcast and sharing your knowledge and experiences with us. I really appreciate it. It was fun and very helpful to know about how to set up Office 365 governance. I know it is a very boring subject to start with, but again, you know, once you set the governance, it is all fun. So that's it for this episode, and I'll be back with another one soon in the coming weeks. In the meantime, follow me on LinkedIn to check out my daily learning videos on Office 365. Bye for now.